Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today we're speaking with guest expert Nicole Rittenmeyer. Nicole has developed, written, directed, and produced hundreds of hours of documentary programming, including Jonestown, The Women Behind the Massacre. Her many awards include a Primetime Emmy for Outstanding Nonfiction Special for 102 Minutes That Changed America. Let's hear what she has to say about the Jonestown murder-suicide. Hi, Nicole. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi. Thanks for inviting me.
So just to get started, when and how did Jim Jones meet Marceline Jones, his wife? And what was their relationship like at the start?
They fell madly in love. They were very young. She was completely smitten. He was, as we know, he's a cult leader. He was incredibly charismatic. I mean, you know, this is long before the cult, but he was an incredibly charismatic guy. And they just fell madly in love with each other. And, you know, Stephen, in our doc, Stephen, their son, sort of describes, you know, how they, the beginning stages of their relationship, and they were just madly in love.
And what kind of social justice work did they do as a couple? And what did they get into with the People's Temple in Indianapolis?
This is the really interesting thing, I think, about them, because their work was always political and it was always social justice oriented. You know, Jim Jones was a Marxist, and that is a, you know, not popular thing to be in Indiana. I'm from Indiana. Mm-hmm. I know, uh-huh. So, you know, particularly in the '50s and sixties. And you know, he was an integrationist, you know, some might say radical. They were the first white family to adopt a black child in the entire state. So, you know, they really very much preached and lived a social justice narrative and a social justice mission in that very sort of old school Christianity kind of way. They, you know, he ultimately ended up moving away from that and more towards the political, and even came to much later almost disavow Christianity as, you know, not evolved enough. But in the early beginning, you know, and that was, he worked very very much in the Black community, in part because the Black community in Indiana was incredibly marginalized. And, you know, A, these were people he could help. And B, you know, I think these are people who would listen to him. There weren't a ton of white people with any kind of power or influence who were interested in speaking to the Black community. You know, it was a different time. And so there was kind of like a mutual thing that happened there.
And how was his wife, Marceline, seen by members of the congregation? What was her role?
So they called her Mother Marceline. And she was also a woman of a particular time and place. I mean, you know, you might think of her as an Indiana housewife in some ways, which is, I think, one of the things that's kind of interesting about the project and the approach we took for it is you almost kind of stepped through the different iterations of feminism and the female experience just by kind of tracking Jim's ascent. But, you know, she was very much a creature of her time, very devoted to her children and extremely maternal and almost selfless in a way. She was soft-spoken. She was kind. And, you know, Jim definitely was the, you know, the alpha in the household.
So after the family moves to California, how does Jim's relationship change with his wife and family? Who are the other women that come into the fold?
So it's a little unclear how early Jim's extramarital experiences started to happen, but you know, they kind of kicked into the next level once they moved to California. And Mary Maga, who is the scholar who kind of really influenced this project, you know, says she often thinks about Carolyn Layton, who Jim meets in California, as almost the second wife. He moves into a different phase of his teachings and preaching, and he moves into a different phase of his life where Marceline is kind of delegated to her figurehead as mother of the church role. And Carolyn kind of steps forward more as a wife. That happens pretty quickly after they move to Ukiah and then Redwood.
And who then Could you tell us more about who were the other women who come into Jim Jones's life, and then and the hierarchy within the church? How did sex and race come into play there?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So, I mean, if you'll indulge me a little bit, one of the ways that we approach this, that my team approached this, is it's kind of all too easy to do a cult doc and go, oh, you know, look at the zoo animals. Aren't they strange? I would never do that. How could anyone let that happen? How could you? And one of the things that's so interesting about Jonestown is there were a lot of their teachings and beliefs that were really appealing. I mean, they were doing these things. They were housing people and feeding people and taking care of the elderly and teaching kids. This is a weird analogy, but it's a little bit like the Black Panthers. You know, the Black Panthers had all these really special, you know, cool programs that really uplifted the community. And they had some other things that they were doing, but you know, that's what draws you in. And if you approach these things, you know, as you're trying to tell the story, if you approach them as a storyteller, like, without trying to find that empathy, it's just, I don't think you tell the right stories. So let me just say that foundationally and then answer your question, which was what again?
I was just curious about the hierarchy within the group.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So Jim always had a lot of helpers. You know, Marceline had that had that function. He was not a manager, and he was presiding over this church that was growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, they just started expanding. They go from Redwood City, they open in San Francisco, they then open in LA, and, you know, it's thousands and thousands of people. And someone has to manage all of this stuff. Someone has to manage the old folks home and, you know, the kids' school and all of these things. So there's an interesting kind of power vacuum that the women that he's sleeping with begin to step into. And I don't mean to say that like it was opportunistic, because I don't know. I imagine it may have been. But they were also, you know, Carolyn Layton, for example, who becomes the second wife, was the child of Methodist ministers. The Methodist religion has a very long tradition of social justice work. And she really believed in this. She was looking for an integrationist church. She was looking for something that had very, very progressive political ideals. And again, it's the early 70s. There aren't a lot of avenues towards being in charge, you know, when you're a woman in that era. So the hierarchy, some of it had to do with longevity. You know, Marceline was the mother of everyone. Carolyn was, you know, kind of the second wife. Some of it had to do with just the favors Jim bestowed on you. Maria Cotsaris, who becomes, I mean, there were a lot of women he was sleeping with. And Maria is, I think, 18 or 19 when he starts sleeping with her, and he bestows upon her all kinds of power in Jonestown. So it was all white women. Why? I don't know. Stephen, his son, has an interesting theory about that, but it was the inner circle was all white women, a couple men. Usually they were the husbands of the women that Jim was cuckolding. So he would have these relationships. Not entirely sure how this worked. It wasn't the focus of our documentary,
right.
But he would have these relationships, and the men would be in the inner circle and the wives would be sleeping with him.
So once Jonestown emerges, first of all, how did he convince all of the members of the church to move and leave everything behind?
Yeah, great question. So Jonestown starts out as this idyllic kind of vacation spot. That's how they're marketing it to the families, to the church members. They're like, oh, you know, you can get away and there'll be this, we're going to create this incredible place of worship and community, and it's a vacation spot. But there are a couple of investigative reporters, it doesn't exist anymore, I don't believe, but I think it was New West Magazine, who are starting to dig dirt on Jim. And the other thing you have to remember is that in the San Francisco years, Jim is actually a really powerful guy. I mean, he is having conversations with Jimmy Carter. He is having conversations with the leadership of the Black Panthers, Russia.
Wow.
You know, he's actually, I think, a commissioner for the San Francisco Housing Authority. He's also taking all kinds of money from his parishioners. I mean, that's one of the reasons why people go, because they've invested everything in the church. You know, it's their whole life. It's got their money. It's got their savings. Jim is this charismatic guy who, by the way, is doing these fake faith healings to persuade, you know, really a lot of, there were a lot of old Black women in Jonestown who come from a tradition of, or in the People's Church, who are, come from a tradition of, you know, deep spirituality. And, you know, so that made them easy targets, really, in a way for Jim. But Jonestown initially is supposed to be a vacation spot for the church membership. And as these investigative reports are digging deeper and deeper into Jim's sexual relationships, the fact that he's taking money, there's also abuse that's happening in the church. corporal abuse. They are, you know, there are punishments. Jim is also starting to become addicted to drugs. He's getting sort of daily injections from Carolyn Layton's sister, Annie, who's, you know, kind of taking on, going to nursing school to be Jim's primary nurse. So all of this stuff is kind of about to blow. Oh, and the other thing that's important is that there's a lot of family members of People's Church parishioners, I guess, parishioners, not the word, members,
congregants, sure.
Congregants, thank you. There you go. Congregants.
I was thinking, trying to think of the word at the same time.
Congregants who, you know, are deeply suspicious of him. They start their own sort of political action group that is trying to kind of separate, get to their family members. And I don't think at this stage anybody was really calling it a cult. I think they're thinking of him more as a con man, as a sexual predator, you know, his critics. It's not really cult yet. And in fact, we don't think of it today because cults are such a huge part of our, you know, culture. But Jonestown is one of the reasons why. Right. Oh. You know, the whole drinking the Kool-Aid thing comes from Jonestown. So he's really much more at this stage of a political guy. He is politically powerful. People, his critics see him as something of a con man slash carny act. And the congregants see him as, you know, this charismatic leader who's preaching truth and everything else. So essentially, the reason they go to Jonestown is because Jim is trying to get the hell out of San Francisco before, you know, he might go to jail. Right. And so suddenly, you know, he's spending more and more time down there. Marcelin is back in the States kind of administering what's left of the church. And regular plane loads of people are going over there to build this place in the jungle that is really unforgiving. There's no water. It's not intended for people to live there. There's no infrastructure. So they have to like get everybody down there to kind of build it.
In the documentary, which is absolutely fascinating, it feels like that last year, Jones is pretty much on drugs most of the time and preaching. I believe that he would just be on the loudspeaker all day. Yeah. What is happening? Like, who's running? How has the power shifted?
So this is the whole reason for the documentary. So I've been around for a minute, and I had done an episode of a series called Conspiracy, where we dealt with Jonestown. And the popular kind of party line about Jim Jones has always been Svengali, charismatic guy who brainwashes his followers and, you know, persuades them all to kill themselves. And, you know, there's something about that is disingenuous and too easy. So I stumbled across, and I remember sort of fighting it at the time, but I was a baby producer and didn't have a lot of power. there wasn't much you could do. And the people who were, you know, the executive producers were like, that's the narrative people want to hear. So I found this woman, really fascinating backstory. Mary Maga is a Methodist scholar and pastor, I believe is what they are, herself, and wrote her mentors were Carolyn and Annie Moore's parents. So she, who are Methodist ministers. So she meets them. They're mentoring her through her doctoral thesis and dissertation. And she, you know, obviously becomes aware of their story. And there's this human element to her book because she's like, this is nuts. I know these people. They're good, normal, decent people. And they raised these women who died in this cult. So how does that happen? How do they get there? And as she's doing the research, you know, obviously she asked their permission to do her book and they said yes. And as she's doing it, she's like, it becomes clear to her. I mean, first of all, her initial mission is to kind of humanize the people who died at Jonestown and to try to get into why the hell they were all there, and, you know, make it a little harder for people to go, oh God, not me. Right.
Right.
So as she's doing her research, she becomes more and more convinced that actually, and I can't imagine what this did for her relationship with the Moors, but that actually Jim was so addled. And his, you know, there's clearly some mental health issues there as well as the drug addiction. He wasn't super physically, you know, he was deteriorating physically as well. He slept most of the day. This is not a guy who can orchestrate. And he was never a manager, right? He needed these women to kind of run this thousand, you know, it had been many thousands in California, but in Jonestown, it was, you know, 1,000 people, and he needed people to kind of run these systems. So as he's more and more enfeebled, you know, still, don't get me wrong, still intimidating, still scary, still capable of telling, you know, he is administering or overseeing the administration of physical abuse. But at the same time, you know, this is not a guy who's like, okay, everybody drink cyanide and kill yourselves now. It was a very long, they went through drills, and there was a constant sort of dry runs for what ends up happening, the cyanide episode. But there's this constant kind of drip, like a Chinese water torture type thing of we are victims. People are persecuting us. They are coming for us. And, you know, it was reinforced by the fact that the family members, the concerned family members, were drumming up, you know, trying to get the congressman to go down there. Not that they shouldn't have done that. Of course, they were worried, but it sort of feeds the beast that is Jim. So these women are managing all this and really controlling it. If you read, Jim had this thing that he would do, he made everyone write him letters every day.
Wow.
Including, you know, like everybody had to do it. Who reads these? I don't know. But so there's this incredible amount of documentation of what people were thinking.
Wow.
And Carolyn is contributing to this whole sense of incredible paranoia. Oh my God, they're coming for us. You know, she's drumming it up. They're all kind of torquing it up. Mm.
So the day of the massacre, is it thought that it was the women who actually distributed the Flavor Aid and cyanide?
Oh yeah, for wow. sure. They ordered it.
Wow.
They tested it on pigs. They came up with the strategy, you know. It is such a misnomer to think of it as a mass suicide, and people called it that for many, many years. But most of the people who died, the vast majority of people who died at Jonestown were elderly and children. You know, some of the elderly were infirm. They were not making choices, and certainly the children weren't, to kill themselves. But there was a perimeter established of armed guards with crossbows and guns. There were syringes that were used to inject people who didn't willingly take the medicine. And this whole, Jim wasn't capable of organizing that. That was the women in the inner circle.
So we ask all of our guest experts this question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept that is to blame for the Jonestown murder suicide, who or what would that be?
Ooh.
Based on your experience and research for the documentary,
sure.
Those you spoke to.
You know, I wouldn't say the inner circle alone, because obviously they needed Jim Jones to be the catalyst. I wouldn't say Jim Jones alone, because he never could have done it without them. I do think there's a concept, not entirely sure what it is. Uh-huh. I don't know if it's fear or. Yeah, I don't know. That's really hard. The reason for it. I mean, I wish I could boil it down to a single thing, but it's such a, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why Johnstown continues to fascinate, right? Is there's so many layers and there's so much humanity wrapped up in it. You know, particularly this story is like, there's sex and there's racism and there's politics and there's paranoia and there's drugs and there's all of these things. And I think it's really important too, to remember that it was such a function of the time. Mm. This all happened, you know, at a time when we as a country were deeply distrustful of government. You know, there was Watergate, there was Vietnam, there was the whole, you know, activist movement. And there was a lot of, there was an explosion of cults at that time because a lot of people were seeking. So I don't know, man, mankind.
Yeah. Trust me. We considered that.
That's dark, but yeah.
No, it feels pretty spot on. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us understand this, you know, terrible tragedy.
Yeah, of course. Like I said, it continues to fascinate. I certainly didn't solve it with the doc. That's for sure. But yeah, I hope someday somebody does.
Me too. I would love that.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
So interesting, right? Just a different angle that we hadn't discussed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we barely talked about his wife or the women who were in the inner circle kind of running the day-to-day.
Right.
It's interesting to talk about that or to hear about, you know, just like how it takes a village. You know what I mean? Like this was a powerful man, but like him being the catalyst that kind of together they form this kind of nightmare town.
Yeah. Somebody needs to run the books for an operation that big, right? I mean, they had fields with crops. They had, you know, mouths to feed. They had babies. There was a lot of logistics that you don't really think about. are taken into consideration. And this guy's all hopped up on drugs. He's not running the show. You know,
it reminded me of Fyre Festival. I mean, it's like not, you know what I mean, in terms of like showing up with no infrastructure, like these people just
no running water.
Yes, and it being marketed as like a resort style, like worship living, you know, like
that was crazy how she talked about that. Yeah, she's like, come on, everybody, let's go on vacation. I mean, we could have put up on the board the thrill of vacation. That was one way I thought.
It's true.
But, you know, something I was struck by, obviously, we talked about ego throughout this whole thing. And it clearly, these women were saw an opportunity at just as much as he used them, they saw an opportunity. And I can't help but think about just, again, society and how sad it is that for a woman at that time, this kind of connection could be the only way that they could be useful or, you know, put their skills and rise up in ranks.
Right. Ascend the power structure.
Yeah. Like, it's not just like they couldn't just like get a job somewhere and like slowly climb their way up based on their work and merit, you know?
Yeah. And again, that kind of goes into his approach early on, especially where he would, he was more religious based, you know, egalitarian. So he would sort of dangle that as like, hey, sure, I need administrators too over here. So,
yeah, because we discussed women. How he, you know, definitely took advantage of the poor black communities. Mm-hmm. But in a way, he also took advantage of you know, women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking, you know, as she was talking and thinking back to our initial conversation, like it really kind of follows this like rock star lifestyle trajectory. Like in the beginning, she was saying like they were really kind of doing good work in the community. They were all about integration and equality. And it seems like, you know, it's like you start off with good intentions and you're kind of a hit. And then the bigger and bigger that you get, like the more power you have, that goes to your head. You start abusing that power and it all just kind of like, you know, it crashes and burns eventually. It just seems like quite the familiar.
Yeah.
Storyline.
Yeah. I mean, he even ended up with a drug problem.
Exactly.
Like
she's a religious rock star who just got too much power and then got too into drugs. And then of course he had to like end it with a bang and boy, did he.
Oh. Really? And this, you know, the times, as Nicole was saying, were a huge factor. I'm glad we took that onto the board. And that was one of our items on the blame board was the tumultuous 60s and 70s. And as Clayton puts it too, it's rock and roll, the age of dawn of rock culture.
It's got to be, it's got to help the community. It's got to be socially charged, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also got to be sexy.
Right.
You know? And,
yeah, risque.
Weird.
It is it's so the end weird. Of the hat. It is so part of humankind. Like, it is, I don't know why we are so drawn to that. Anyway, I'm pretty haunted by some of the images and sound bites in this film because, you know, they, like she said, okay, wait, before I even go in, well, let's do both at the same time. Okay, this is how I'm literally having a conversation with myself out loud. There's footage that like you guys talked about, there's the tapes, but there's even footage of the day of the massacre and how they just kind of like started getting people to line up and start drinking the poison and how they, you know, did it to the children first. Like they had and these people were watching their children die. And it's like, and that was also a form of manipulation, because once the children are dead, then, you know, the adult, then what do you do, right? As a parent. And there's just sound bites of I forget who it was. It was one of the inside, it might have been Marceline, the wife, who's saying, you know, they're crying not because they're in pain. They're just crying, you know, I don't know. She kept telling them that the reason they were crying was not because they were in pain, but like she didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And the sounds, it's just horrifying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very disturbing. And, you know, what you were saying before about it takes a village, it certainly does. And it's even more disturbing that this event could be carried out. And you know, I thought one thing we missed too, or we could have blamed, is media or marketing, because I know it's not directly responsible, but the fact that this phrase, drink the Kool-Aid, as a sort of way of explaining somebody blindly going into something they don't
right. Yeah. Even though it was flavored, but yes, drink the right. Kool-Aid was right. The phrase that came out of it.
Yeah. Which to me is a way of minimizing this tragedy that is right. really upsetting in my mind, because
absolutely,
you know, this was way more complicated than that. This was manipulation. This was, again, as Nicole brought up, sunk cost effect, like Lance was talking about. This was people who gave their money, their lives, all their resources. They were being held against their will. Information wasn't being given to them. So there were many, many factors at play that wasn't just blindly going into something.
Yes. That is a very deceptive phrase that
it's
came
a deceptive
out of this
phrase that came out of the tragedy, and now will forever be linked to this tragedy, which is, it really doesn't represent what happened here.
Right. I think it's so, that concept, you know, that Nicole and Lance brought up very astutely about just finding yourself like you've invested everything into this project and then suddenly having the realization what the project really is, and that you're kind of just like stuck with that, you know, like imagine that moment.
I can't
mentally and emotionally, and then just having to be like, well, I just have to double down. Like, I know this is going to crash and burn, but like, what other option do I have?
Right.
Other than just to be like, mea culpa, I'm so wrong. And I'm like,
get me out of here.
Rock bottom. Like, someone's got to kind of, I need a new rescuer. Like, this, like, I thought this guy was rescuing me. Now I need somebody else to do it.
I can't imagine, especially if someone who's already suffered so much.
Yeah.
Right. To begin with. And that's why they found this place.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just so terrible.
Very sad.
But can we also just talk about the fact that he made everyone write him letters every day?
Oh yeah, interesting.
What? It's such a way of controlling people. It's like, you spend your time writing a letter to me.
He would do well in the new social media age, because he'd have comments all the time on his feeds, right?
Ew, gross.
And he would eat it up, I'm sure.
The letters are crazy. I also wanted to bring up one little factoid, since I am the fact checker, that we left out of both of the podcasts, which I wanted to connect Leo Ryan and why he went down to Jonestown. Uh-huh. He was there to, you know, check on the well-being. But did we mention the fact that he was connected? He was a friend of the father of a former temple member, Bob Houston.
I don't think we brought that up.
Okay.
No.
So Bob Houston was found dead near train tracks 3 days after a taped telephone call with his ex-wife, where they discussed leaving the temple. So I obviously don't think, you know, Jones was charged with that, but, you know, you can draw your own conclusions now that we see what happened in Jonestown. But, you know, it's just crazy that this guy, Ryan, went down, the congressman, you know, because of this sort of like friend tie that he had connected to one of the victims of this movement.
Yeah.
And had that never happened, you know, you wonder if it would have ended differently or something like that.
Well, I know there was also the custody battle. It was a couple. They were married and they had a child while they were part members of the church. And the wife had been one of the women that Jim Jones had been sleeping with. So there was a question of the paternity of the child. And the couple had decided they wanted to leave the church, but Jones forced them to leave behind the child. And they were trying to get the child out of the cult.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really heating up at the time of the massacre. Yeah. Sadly, the the child was one of the victims who died in the massacre. Right.
Yeah, so more forces at play, just to fill in the shading of things we maybe missed during the original
podcast.
It felt
like it was a lot was about to come out. The media was on to them. Yeah. They had this custody battle. He was on drugs. The congressman, there were people defecting. It was a perfect storm of paranoia. Mm-hmm. He just manipulated them into thinking that it was only going, this was it. This was the mm-hmm. end. So what do we think about humankind?
Yeah.
To remind everyone, we threw Jim Jones in jail, but we did give the big slap to human nature, which was kind of right in the wheelhouse of what she was circling in on.
I mean, I totally understand that it's never just one person at play. Although I do wonder, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg, right? When it comes to Jim Jones and how, you know, everyone got on board.
Well, it's true. And Lance's point, too, if you take Jim Jones out of this equation, do these women just sort of spontaneously start Jonestown and
have
a mass murder? Yeah. No, I don't think so.
But I do like incorporating human nature into it.
Oh yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we got it right.
Yeah,
got it right.
I still felt good about it. Yeah.
It's good to have him in jail, and it's good for it to slap our human nature and maybe hopefully wake up our nature.
Wake
to
up
something better.
Yeah, like a,
what are
on,
we
humans.
Doing?
I know.
What are we? Hello. Yeah. We can be better than this.
Yes, we can do better.
So whenever you have an instinct, question it and then move on with your day. Mm-hmm. That's my advice. Make sure you're, you know, it's a good
question
instinct.
Question everything.
Question every instinct
question
you have.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you to Nicole and thank you guys for doing this debrief, you know?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible tragedy that I didn't know as much. I mean, you hear about the Jonestown massacre, but like, do you really know the details?
No. As we talked about, there's a huge misconception about it based on this phrase and quote that came out of it.
Exactly. Well, tune in next week. We're going to be discussing Balloon Fest.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.